Good morning. It's time for another conversation. This is High Desert Dialogue, conversations with Regina and Roxanne, here on Talk 960. Let's start talking.
Good morning, Roxanne. How are you?
Good to see you again, Regina. Good morning to our listeners.
I know. I love this time of year, summertime. I say that every week.
I hope you are enjoying it, making your plans, and thanks for taking us with you this morning.
Yes, yes. And you know what, Roxanne? We are just really lucky. We've got all this sunshine in the office this morning.
We have some new guests,
new
friends.
We've got some new beautiful women who are here who are doing amazing things in our community. And you know how I feel about those things that are being done and they're like the best kept secret?
Mm-hmm.
Well, this is one of those and we don't want that. So we are unveiling this best kept secret here this morning. And I'm excited to welcome the CEO, who is Pam Mender, and Athena Cordero, who is the program director with CA Help, which is a JPA. They're going to explain all of that to you in a moment because I do not want to embarrass myself, right? And we also have their silent partner, Anna Perez.
Hi, Anna.
Who is the community outreach specialist for this organization. So Pam, Athena, and Anna, welcome to Conversations with Regina and Roxanne.
Thank you.
We are delighted to have you here. You just have already just a delightful group of women. So happy to meet all of you. Want you to tell us a little bit about the California Association of Health and Education Linked Professions, JPA. So Pam, tell us what that is,
who you are,
what that means.
Okay, go ahead. So basically, the JPA, which is a Joint Power Authority, is the overarching umbrella for Desert Mountain SELPA, Desert Mountain Charter SELPA, and our Desert Mountain Children's Center.
Okay.
And a SELPA is a special education local plan area.
Okay.
That'll pause there for a second.
That's okay.
And what that is we are an educational entity where the state and federal funds come through us, and then it's delivered out to the districts.
Got it.
And
okay.
So the districts in the High Desert are all part of our SELPA, which include from Needles to Trona, Baker to Hesperia, and then everything in between.
Everything in between. Wow,
exactly.
That's a big region.
It is a big region. It's 19,000 square miles, and so we're one of the largest, if not the largest, SELPA. In the state.
Okay.
And so with that, we provide various services for districts. We assist them with, we have program specialists that go out and do a lot of training with teachers, instructional assistants.
Okay.
We have what we call our community advisory committee that we have 4 meetings per year, and that is held with parents of students with disabilities. And then the district also has one representative on that committee as well. So to talk about various things that are happening in special education.
So that's a community
advisory committee.
Okay, and I'm going to round back on that a little later to ask you some questions about that and how maybe some of our parents that are listening can kind of dial into that.
But absolutely. We also provide support in various ways to parents. Sometimes when parents aren't having the best of luck when they're trying to get their child's IEP or being assessed for special education or getting that assessment, sometimes there's glitches. And so we have a process called alternative dispute resolution where we work with the parents and the district to come to a resolution and be able to get services moving forward, or having an understanding and building the relationship between the parents and the district.
Which is great. And Pam, tell us IEP.
Individualized Education Program. Mm-hmm.
Okay, okay.
And so that's the plan that we put together for students that may be lacking in some areas.
Okay, all right.
And so that's all done through assessment by a school psychologist or a speech therapist, could be an occupational therapist, physical therapist, depending on where we're seeing the child's deficits.
Okay.
And every district has those professions that do those assessments.
Okay. And so help me to better understand your role in positioning, because it sounds like you kind of are overarching on the school districts, but is there a way that community or parents have direct access to you? Is there a way for that to take place?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
When we get calls from parents, as the CEO, I am overall the organization. Our organization is about 360 plus employees.
Mm.
And so when there's issues, I have program specialists, there's program managers, which are usually the first step.
Okay.
But many times I keep myself available. Parents have direct contact with me. They can call me and I will talk with them, hear what their issues are, and we'll get in touch with their special ed director at their district. I'll bring in my other staff members that can really be helpful to them as well.
Okay. And so if I'm a parent and I'm hearing this, what type of student? Are we talking specifically about special education, those students who have IEPs? Is that what we're talking about? Because we're not talking about everybody who's a parent and got a kid, they can call you.
Right.
I don't want that to happen for
Thank
you. Right? So can
yes.
we kind of specify?
Yes, it is students with an IEP.
Okay.
Or a student who may be on a 504 plan. And a 504 plan is a specialized plan for a student who doesn't necessarily qualify for special education services, but they do have a deficit that's affecting them in some way, shape, or form.
Okay.
And so you can develop a plan at the school site that this child could have, or student could have, accommodations or modifications within their program.
Okay.
And so they can call about that. That is a general ed function, but we still provide information on that and some direction for parents with that.
Well, Athena, since you jumped in here, I know that you got something going on. There's a new exciting project that you guys have. I believe it's a podcast.
It is. So because we have so many resources in our organization, we wanted to find a way to tell the community in an easier way than sending emails or text messages,
yes.
because it gets hard to keep up with all of that right now. I'm a parent. I get those newsletters from the school. I try to keep up with them, but it's rough.
Yeah.
If there's something I can listen to very quickly, 15, 20 minutes, that's probably your best bet for me as a parent.
Yes.
So with Pam's blessing on the whole project, our team came together. We have a small but mighty podcast team. We just launched just this past month in April.
Yay!
And we're going to drop about an episode a month
okay.
through the school year. Summertime, take a little bit of a break just to regroup.
Okay.
But it's been very exciting. There was a lot of work put into it that we didn't know at
yes.
the very beginning. But our first episode was on potty learning.
Okay.
So very tailored toward the parent audience to make sure that we focus on them first.
Mm-hmm.
But as adults, we learned a lot of things in that episode.
Okay.
There's some stuff that I'm ashamed of myself as a parent when I did potty learning with my kids, but you know.
And you can listen to it right now, too, because you have two episodes already in the bag.
We
said?
Do.
All
we
right.
do.
And
absolutely.
How can people how can we do that? Listen to it?
So if you go to fosteringfutures.buzzsprout, let me make sure I'm saying it right.
Oh, that's a nice name.
Yeah, fosteringfutures.buzzsprout.com.
Okay.
You could log on there. Our episodes are already on that platform. Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Buzzsprout. I'm thinking one more. I can't remember what the other one is. You'll see them on there.
Okay.
But basically, we try to stick to about 15, 20 minutes.
Okay.
Just so it's enough, you know?
Yeah.
We always want to leave parents, the audience, educators, whoever's listening with some resources, something that they can try that day. And a way to get in contact with us or to get in contact with one of our team. So like Pam mentioned, we have our regional services team, program specialists. We have folks that train teachers. We have folks that work directly with students, the outreach team working directly with families. There's so much going on that we even needed our own internal resource fair of sorts so that we can get to know each other because we
right.
grow every single day. We just had one of those. And so this is just a way for us to talk about it. Push it out into the community as much as possible so that we can help in a way that covers a much bigger area. Like Pam said,
and
we're
19.
And
that's why I'm so glad
exciting.
That you guys are here to share with our audience all of the wonderful things that you are doing, the services and resources that you provide to community. So before I let you go, tell us how, if someone is interested, wants to learn more, and reach out, have a conversation with Pam. How can they do that?
So if you go onto our website, cahelp.org,
mm-hmm.
All of our contact information, of course, will be on there. All of our programs have a tab of their own. You can look into those. there's a portal for parents that can go on and get information there. Really, the website is a way to get in contact with us. Of course, you can call the office. They'll direct you to any department you need. Of course, because Pam's willing to talk to parents directly, they can ask for her. But the website is a way to get a better idea of what your needs might be.
Right.
It'll get you to the right place.
Right. I want to thank you ladies for coming in today and sharing with us. You have an open invitation to come back as things are growing and evolving, and you're doing things where community can be involved and want to be involved. We just look forward to having you back. I do want to thank each and every one of you for your commitment to the students and the families and the educators here in our High Desert. It's hugely important. It is key and essential to helping us to establish and create thriving and vibrant communities. So thank you for the work that you do. And we're going to listen into your podcast.
Yeah, don't forget about that. What's the website again?
So our website is cahelp.org, but our podcast is fosteringfutures.buzzsprout.com.
So don't forget to check that out.
Yes. And so thank you for coming in today and sharing this wealth of information. And I hope that your phones are ringing off the hook and that I don't hope that your website crashes, but I hope that you start to see a high increase of traffic.
I hope we got a great introduction to your services.
Yes. Yes. So thank you for being here today.
Thank you.
Good morning, Regina, and our listeners once again during the weekend.
I know. It's a great weekend, another beautiful weekend here in the High Desert. And Roxanne, you know, this is going to be kind of an interesting interview because this gentleman has been practicing personal injury law for about 13 years.
Awesome.
He has established a practice here in the High Desert.
And also in Lynn Empire, too, right?
Yes,
or Orange
absolutely,
County?
Mm-hmm. Orange County area. We're happy to welcome to the show Ian Silverthorne from Silverthorne Attorneys.
Hi.
Ian, welcome to Conversations with Regina
Hello.
And Roxanne.
Hey, how are you guys doing?
Doing well.
We are great. We are great. You know, I wanted to have you maybe share a little bit of your background and history, you know, before we actually dive into some conversation.
Oh, yeah, certainly. Well, thanks for having me. Thanks for having me on the show.
You're welcome.
I am an attorney that I just focus on civil litigation, personal injury cases. I grew up in the state of Maine, and I came out to California when I was 19 to go to college and ended up putting myself through school, going to law school, getting married. I've got four children, and I love what I do. That's me in a nutshell.
Well, that's wonderful. You know, they say it's always great when you love what it is you do. One of the things that I wanted to ask you, you know, our show really focuses primarily on things that impact and affect the High Desert in one way or another. And so is there any, I don't know, any data? Are you seeing, tracking any kind of uptick here in the High Desert, you know, having to do with personal injury cases?
You know, I am. I think as people move to the High Desert, I know the population's growing and people kind of want a kind of a freer lifestyle away from the hustle and bustle of the city.
Yes.
A lot of times people are unfamiliar with traffic flows, things like that. I know there's construction on the freeway. On-ramps and off-ramps can get backed up. Sometimes people bring their dogs with them, and they've got a dog in a new environment, new neighborhood. You've got people riding bikes in new places. Just all the things associated with a growing population leads to more injury cases.
Wow. You know what? That leads me to, Ian, asking you about dog bites and insurance. So can you kind of share with us what dog owners should know, particularly if they're homeowners or renters, right?
Yes.
Is there certain information or key points that they should consider?
Yes. Well, the first thing I always say to a dog owner is avoid the tendency to feel like you have to prove to people around you that your dog is safe by offering to let people pet it, et cetera. Many bites happen that way, mm-hmm. and it's always just a good rule to just, you know, it's your dog. Don't worry about proving to anybody it's safe. Keep it on a leash, et cetera. But what you want is you want a good homeowner's insurance policy that includes a liability coverage for a dog bite. And as a renter, you want that same coverage. These are very inexpensive policies. And what happens is, in California, because you're strictly liable if your dog bites somebody, mm-hmm. your insurance steps in and defends you. They actually hire the lawyer to defend you in the case, and they make sure that your assets are safe and free from judgment.
Right, right. And so it would definitely be in someone's interest that is a dog owner, whether they're a homeowner or a renter, to look into that liability coverage and make sure they have that and make that investment. Because, you know, insurance is one of those things that it's better to have it and not need it than to need it and not have it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Exactly.
Yeah, so I have another question with regard to dogs. Is there any kind of guidelines or, you know, because most people have Amazon or Prime, you know, some form of delivery, right? And so being concerned about, you know, the delivery person accessing your property.
Yes.
And having, I hate to say it this way, but an altercation with your dog. Is there some kind of consideration or thought we should be giving to those situations?
Absolutely. A lot of people believe that they will be aware of when a delivery driver comes, and that's when they put their dog away, or that's when they make preparations to make sure their dog does not bite somebody. I always advise against that. I always advise have your dog contained in a way that whether or not a delivery driver walks up to your front door, there's no chance of them getting bit at any time.
Mm-hmm.
Because sometimes they show up at a different time that you didn't anticipate, or they could be delivering to the wrong address, and that could be yours.
Mm-hmm.
So you end up being liable
right.
if your dog bites somebody no matter what.
So again, you know, it's always safe to veer on the side of being cautious, right?
Yes.
Just preparing for that. Staying with that particular topic, are there any county ordinances or local municipality ordinances that dog owners should be aware of that could put them in potential, you know, liability situations?
Well, the main one is simply California's law that places what's called strict liability on the owner of a dog. If your dog bites somebody, you are liable.
Okay.
Whether or not somebody's petting your dog, whether or not they're walking by, it doesn't matter the circumstance.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no quote-unquote free bite rule in California. So even if it's the first time your dog bites somebody, you're still going to be liable.
Is California the only state that has this law, or is it common in different states?
It's common in different states. It used to be that if your dog bit somebody, then everybody was on notice that it was dangerous, and then it kind of evolved to just in general, people don't want dogs that bite people
mm-hmm.
around, so mm-hmm. it's a policy issue.
Yeah, one of the other things is as we're approaching, you know, this summertime and people are getting out and our kids are going to be out of school and all of that, bicycle injuries. Can you talk to me a little
or
bit about
that? Scooter injuries,
yeah,
too.
Is there mm-hmm. an uptick in that?
There is. There is, as the summer months come along. People want to get out and enjoy their bicycles and enjoy their scooters and get some exercise. And the thing there is people oftentimes overestimate whether or not a car can see them.
Mm-hmm.
And a car can hit them it can still be the car's fault, but you don't want to be on a bicycle being hit by a car, even if it's the car's fault.
Right.
So many people need to ride with a more cautious attitude and just assume that the car doesn't see you. You know, same thing with riding a motorcycle. I tell motorcyclists, as you come up to an intersection, rev your engine. Make sure car drivers know where you are. So that tends to increase the safety level when riding a two-wheeled vehicle.
Mm-hmm. And I know for us here in the high desert, having bike lanes.
Yeah, you see more bike lanes over here.
Municipalities. I know Victorville at one point in time, and Apple Valley as well as Hesperia gave great consideration to, developing more bike lanes and paths so that people could get out and enjoy. And I think it's just, if I'm understanding you correctly, Ian, I think you're just saying for us to be cautious and aware and then practice safety, right, as best we possibly can while being on the road. I got this question. When is it necessary to contact a personal injury attorney?
After you talk to a doctor or seek medical treatment. I always tell people that getting a lawyer is the second most important thing you can do after an accident, the first being taking care of your injuries. And many people try to take on the role of investigator, advocate, lawyer for themselves, and start out talking to an insurance adjuster about their case, trying to negotiate their way through the process, and it always hurts them in the end because you end up realizing that the insurance company is not going to do what's right just because you do what they ask. They will manipulate you into feeling almost shameful for having an injury claim. With me on your side, you don't do anything but treat with a doctor for your injuries. Mm-hmm. I have a little motto, you heal, I handle the rest.
Okay. Now, is there, let's say, for example, there's an auto accident. Are there some key questions or basic information that one should gather, whether doesn't matter which side of it they're on, whether they were, you know, at fault or not or whatever. But is there some key information that just as a general practice we should gather?
Yes. You want to get, if anything, you want to get the license plate of the vehicle that was involved.
Mm-hmm.
Most information can be at least traced back to that. But ideally, you want to get the driver's license, the person driving, a picture of the person driving. You want to get their insurance contact information, like their policy number.
Mm-hmm.
And you want to take pictures of the scene so you can describe accurately what happened later if you need to.
Mm.
And those are situations if the police are not taking a report. If the police are taking a report, let them do their job. Don't worry about whether or not they're getting all the contact information. They will at least obtain that and just follow their instructions.
Okay. And then going back, rounding back to what we've talked about with regard to a situation that might occur because of a dog bite and or injury, is there basic information that we should also gather in that situation?
Yes. Ideally, you really want to get the dog owner's information.
Okay.
You want to be able to identify the person that owns the dog. And if you're bit by a dog, you should always call animal control. I've seen it too often where somebody is bit by a dog and later on, that dog bites somebody else like a child, and that bite's much more serious. Had there been a report taken, the dog quarantined, the owner been forced to go through the process, they might have been a little bit more cautious about their dog later on.
Mm.
So it's the same thing with a dog bite. Contact for the dog owner, and then get animal control involved.
Wow. Well, Ian, I want to thank you for sharing this information with us. I think it's very valuable and enlightening, informative, wouldn't you say, Roxanne?
Yes. And Ian, if anybody who's listening who wants to have you represent them or wants more information about your services, can you tell us again what your office can provide and how to contact you?
Yeah, I represent people that are injured in all kinds of personal injury cases. Dog bites, car accidents, bicycle accidents, motorcycle accidents. And it's actually the only field of law that I practice in. And I've got an easy-to-remember website, injurednow.com. You can find me at injurednow.com.
And again, you have office here in the High Desert and also Orange County, too.
Yes. Yes, okay. I do.
Anything else that you would like to share with our listeners about your services or, again, thank you for these tips and any information you can provide for us, again, as we go into the summer months or anything that we should be aware of as we do live here in California?
You know, I would just urge people, if you're injured because of somebody else's negligence, like in a car accident or with a dog bite or et cetera, get a lawyer. Don't think you can handle it on your own. Chances are you're smart enough and you're capable enough to take care of it, but you don't realize how the insurance company is going to treat you. Mm. And at the end, you're going to have wasted a lot of time. You get a lawyer involved on day one, you can relax, heal, and get compensation.
Awesome.
Well, we want to thank you for sharing this time with us, and we'll look forward to reaching out to you maybe later in the year and get updated on some other issues, because I think this has all been very insightful and informative for our listeners. So thank you.
Thank you, Ian. And
thank
again,
you.
InjureNow.com for more information or to get in contact with Ian. Thank you again, Ian.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks again for joining us this weekend on High Desert Dialogue, Conversations with Virginia and Roxanne. Monday is Memorial Day, and so many High Desert organizations will be hosting Memorial Day observances to pay tribute to the fallen men and women of the U.S. military. Some of the events will include festivals, car shows, barbecues to kick off the unofficial start of summer. Memorial Day is Monday, May 26th, with the first day of summer officially happening on June the 20th. Sunland Ford will host its 18th annual Memorial Weekend Charity Car and Bike Show from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday, May 24th in Victorville. The Wrightwood Community Services District will host a Memorial Day Country Celebration from 3 to 7 p.m. on Saturday, May 24th at 1275 Highway 2 in Wrightwood. The veteran-operated nonprofit Rockin' Skies Ranch will host its annual Memorial Day Barbecue from noon to 3 p.m. on Sunday, May 5th at 15392 Marauder Road in Victorville. The Lucerne Valley Chamber of Commerce Memorial Day Celebration will be happening on Monday, May 6th at 10 a.m. at the gazebo at Memorial Park, 2533 Highway 18. Apple Valley's Memorial Day Ceremony is scheduled to be happening at 8 a.m. on Monday, May 26th at Civic Center Park in Apple Valley. A Memorial Day service is scheduled at 11 a.m. on Monday, May 26th at Elmview Cemetery on Irwin Road in Barstow. Volunteers interested in placing U.S. flags on veterans' grave sites can meet at the cemetery at 8 a.m. on Sunday before Memorial Day. The 17th Annual Memorial Day Ceremony is scheduled at 11 a.m. on Monday, May 26th at the Wrightwood Veterans Memorial Park at 1274 Evergreen Road in Wrightwood. In the Phelan area, the Phelan VFW Post 9415 will host its annual Memorial Day Ceremony at 11 a.m. on Monday, May 26th at 4892 Nielsen Road in Phelan. The event will include the Serrano High School Choir and flag retirement by the Boy Scouts. A potluck will also be held after the ceremony. Desert View Memorial Park will host a Memorial Day celebration from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. also on Monday, May 26th in Victorville. Honoring fallen military members began as Decoration Day after the Civil War, when families of both Union and Confederate forces began decorating the graves of those who died in the conflict. This became known as Memorial Day and was standardized to be celebrated on the last Monday in May by an act of Congress in 1968. Thank you to those who have served and continue to serve for our country. If you missed any of these events, we'll have more information on our station's Facebook pages and community calendar. Thanks again for being a part of the conversation. Reach out to us and let us know what you want to talk about. Send us an email at RoxanneScafidi@edbroadcasters.com.
High Desert Dialogue, conversations with Regina and Roxanne. We'll talk to you next weekend.